This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net.
We are on the air with Wells Tech. Technology, ministry, where those two meet. This is episode 385 for Tuesday, March 24th, 2015. My name is Martin Spriggs. I'm here every Tuesday and happy that you are here as well. Sally Draper is joining me as usual. How is Sally Draper? You survived the big blizzard out there in the plains of Minnesota, didn't you?
That's right. We had some pretty heavy snow this past weekend, but that's okay. We know spring is in sight, and we're just holding on for it. My sister said, don't worry, it'll come soon. And I said, yep, July's just around the corner. So
that's the way it works around.
Anytime now, yeah. So.
But the sun is shining at least here today, and we're happy about that. We're also happy that we have a special guest joining us, Pastor James Wilcox from Good Shepherds Lutheran Church in beautiful West Allis, Wisconsin. Hi, James. How are you?
Hi, Martin. I am doing great. It's great to be here with you guys today. Really appreciate the opportunity to share some things for you. And Sally, howdy.
Hey, James. Great to hear from you.
Yeah.
Very good of you to join us. Appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule. Maybe before we jump into our conversation of the day, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're serving, how long you've been there, a little bit about James Wilcox.
So, serving in West Allis, Wisconsin, just a little ways out of Milwaukee, and been here since 2010, when I took the call. I had been previously serving in South Dakota, mission congregation there, and have been kind of a computer geek all along. I've always been interested in technology and those aspects of life, and integrating that into ministry and being a helping hand in our churches and how they use technology. Then just a privilege to bring two areas I love, being a pastor, sharing the gospel with people, and then also playing around with computers and different aspects of technology. So it's been a lot of fun.
Yep, we are kindred spirits in that regard for sure. You were good enough to submit a proposal to be a Wells Tech Conference session leader. And we're right kind of in the midst of trying to interview many of our session leaders, and you were good enough to consent to do that. Tell us what the name of the session is and just kind of a high-level overview of what you'll be presenting this summer for Wells Tech Conference.
Sure, yeah. The session title is called Smart Computer Security. And it actually, the timing of this comes really nice because I would suspect that many of our listeners are called workers, and so the Anthem hack that we all got notified of just recently, that Blue Cross Blue Shield had been hacked, brings this topic out to focus a little bit. So what we're going to do is we're going to spend some time talking about things that we can do to protect ourselves and our organizations, like managing these many, many passwords that we have to manage now. How can we encrypt things securely and make it easy for everybody to do? How we can browse safely on the internet and raise some awareness too that maybe just because we're churches or a small quote-unquote synod that we aren't going to be targets to some of these attacks we hear about. We should be aware of these things because the information that we have is something that people who have poor intentions might want to take advantage of. So we'll be talking about those kinds of things and hopefully making it easy for people to implement in their home churches or schools.
Yeah, I can see lots of applications personally. I can see them as well for churches and schools. James, I'm particularly interested in your perspective as a pastor. Is this something that pastors need to be concerned about? Or is this maybe just your secretary's problem or whatever, since she deals with the data, perhaps?
Well, you know, it's really an organizational concern. Again, going back to that Anthem hack, that hits close to home. I was doing some reading on it, actually, as I was thinking about our interview today. And what the industry is thinking, what security researchers are thinking with that Anthem hack is that might have been a Chinese espionage group working out of a college, a university in China, looking either for particular data of a particular person, and so they just decided to grab it all. Or it could have been a practice run for some of their security personnel to see, hey, can we do this? And, yep, we can. Now what can we do next? Okay, so that's sort of the high view, and we're all affected by that. For me, though, I think, like, in churches and schools, the dangers seem to be a little bit more indirect. You know, churches typically aren't targeted for this, at least I guess I haven't heard too many high-profile churches that have been targeted for whatever reason. You know, hackers just seem to be after the accumulation of data. So your name, your phone number, your address, these are things that they want. We know they want to open lines of credit in our name. We know they want to file our tax returns before we do. Sometimes they're just looking to embarrass people or to embarrass organizations. So that's all our concern, whether we are pastors, teachers, the church secretary. And in order for those hackers to do those kinds of things, they need information. And they usually don't use a single source for that information. So in other words, now if I can get the address from over here, I can get the phone number from over here, if I can get the last four digits of credit card from over here, then you can put it all together. And I don't know if you've ever heard of a fellow by the name of Matt Honan. Does that ring any bells?
No, not about me.
Okay. Matt Honan, I think, is a writer for Wired magazine. And about 2 years ago, his entire digital life was just totally erased.
Yeah.
And the way they were able to do it was they took a little bit of information from here and here and here, and they used the weak security practices of one major company, Amazon, against another major company, Google, and they were able to use the little loopholes that they knew about, and they put all those pieces together, and they really even weren't after his digital life, they were after his Twitter handle. They liked his Twitter handle. And in the wake of all of that, he lost all this data, pictures that he can never replace, all that stuff. And so that's kind of where we're finding ourselves now. And at church, you know, in the school office, we have all this data that we're gathering, the database programs that we're using to capture our members' information or visitors' information. Those often fall into unencrypted databases. So, for instance, here, if my church secretary's computer were to get stolen, now we have this computer that contains names, addresses, phone numbers, you know, personal information, and we've lost control of that data, and that's the big concern. You know, somebody who breaks in here and steals something, you know, they may just be after the parts so they can sell them, you know, for whatever they're needing money to sell for, but we don't know that. The next level after this is some of these database programs that we're using are syncing their data out onto the cloud. And again, how secure are those systems? What are they using? And is anybody asking that question? But, and then another risk, too, is is just the sensitive nature of church work. You know, as I'm a pastor, I'm sending an email to somebody, and it's, you know, of a sensitive nature. How do I know that the intended recipient is reading that on the other end when I send it to smithfamily@gmail.com? You know, so we need to have some better common practices, I think, in our circle. So try to raise some of those concerns with this.
So is there something, James, in your past bad experience or something that kind of prompted you to want to get interested in this? It obviously sounds like you stay up on these kinds of things and you know, are clearly taking steps to increase security in your own personal life and maybe in your congregational life. Why your focus here and why your interest maybe even presenting a session?
Well, I guess, you know, it goes back to my geek by nature. You know, I love digging into computers and figuring them out. So I've always been into that. I remember watching a television show called The Screensavers. And it was on a network television, I think, called Tech TV. It had a host by the name of Leo Laporte. And enjoyed just how they were introducing new technologies and explaining technology to people. So that was interesting. When podcasting then became a little bit more popular, I remember thinking, I've got to get into this podcasting thing. That sounds kind of interesting. Looked up Leo Laporte, and he had a podcast called Security Now. Security Now, led by a man by the name of Steve Gibson. Gibson Research Corporation, and the whole podcast centers around security in the digital age, and it's just, it's always fascinating. It sometimes doesn't deal directly with computer security. He did a whole series on how the internet works, but it plays into this whole thing, and then, so I keep up that way, and also, Brian Krebs from KrebsOnSecurity.com, he always gets the inside scoop into what's happening with computer security. He's got a couple alter egos that he uses to penetrate hacker rings and different things that he can gain information and then pass that on to people like you and me so that we know what we can do better. So basically, you know, I've just kind of grabbed these things up to pass them out. I've never, certainly not an industry leader here or anything like that, but I see sometimes how fast and loose we're playing with data or our members' data, and they've entrusted that to us. I want to be responsible to that trust because we don't want to risk the opportunity to share the gospel with them because we haven't taken care of the stuff that they've given us to protect.
Right. You know, nightmare certainly would be having to get up after a service or put an article in the newsletter saying, hey, we lost your data.
Yeah. Right.
So you may want to be careful, check your bank statements and credit card statements because, hey, your identity may be stolen as a result of us now, of us being careless with your...
Well, I just think how much effort Anthem is putting in to this whole campaign,
right,
to reach out to all these called workers. Would we have even the manpower in a church or a school to put that kind of a campaign together to reach out to our members and say, we are really sorry, we messed up here, here's right, how we're going to fix it. And better not to have that conversation to begin with.
Well, James, it sounds like you have a lot to fill your short 50-minute session. I'm wondering if you could give us a taste of maybe any tools or tips that you personally use to stay safe.
15 minutes. I thought you were giving me an hour. Okay. Well,
I said 50.
Oh, okay. I missed
your session. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I definitely can give you plenty of 50. All right. Yeah, so what do I do? You know, sometimes we always think, well, you know, hey, I've got my Microsoft Security Essentials, I've got that installed, or I've got Symantec or something. And I think, you know, if that's the extent to what we've done, then we've fallen victim to sometimes a fallacy that is technology will be the answer to this problem. But the reality is, of course, there's no single technology that can prevent the loss of data. I mean, this, you know, it's always a cat and mouse game between the good guys and the bad guys on this. And as soon as one hole is plugged, you know, they're finding others. And, you know, and some of this is state sponsored. So, you know, none of us are going to figure everything out, especially if the whole country is putting their resources into finding the next security hole that they can take advantage of. So we can leverage technology and we can make good security practices more convenient. And so here's how I go about doing that. Again, I'm going to fall back on somebody I mentioned earlier, Brian Krebs from Krebs on Security. He has a lot of good advice to pass on. And I follow three simple rules that Brian gives to us through his website. We're going to talk about these at that conference here in the Smart Computer Security session this summer in some more detail. But rule number one is, if I didn't go looking for it on the internet, I'm not going to install it. Okay? And so we've all been browsing the internet, and a window pops up and says, oh, your computer is running so slowly. Just click on me and I'll make your computer run faster. I wasn't looking for that. I'm not going to click on it. So I dismissed the window. That's the first rule. If I didn't go looking for it, I'm not going to install it. Second rule, if I installed it, I need to keep it updated. Have you ever noticed how often Flash is updating itself these days?
Yeah.
Like, painfully like, so, yes.
Yeah. You know how often Adobe thought they were going to be updating Flash when they first started doing automatic updates?
No.
It was quarterly. They thought they could get away with updating Flash 4 times a year. It's just laughable. I mean, you think about how much it's out there, and they thought they were just going to get it 4 times a year. So that's how much Adobe is recognizing they need to update their software to keep up with security vulnerabilities and performance upgrades and all the other things they want to do too. So if I installed it, I need to keep it updated, and that just makes me less vulnerable because a lot of times the old legacy software that we've got is still being actively exploited. I think there's still remember the old Code Red virus? What was that? Maybe 10 years ago already? That's still floating around out there. Why? Because there's Windows 95 machines that are still chugging along on the internet somewhere that nobody's bothered to turn off yet or update. Or because some company's got some software that they run and it just keeps stuff right, sort of like background noise on the internet. So we need to keep our software updated. The third rule I follow is, if I don't need it, I uninstall it. So you go through the list of the programs on your computer, and if you're not using it anymore, you just get rid of it. You're not updating it, so it's becoming a security problem just sitting there. You know, if you get a new laptop from Dell, just get rid of all the junk that comes with it. You don't need it, and you know, if you did need it, you can find it and you can get it later. Those are the three rules I follow, and you know, they don't really have anything to do with particular software. It's behavioral changes, and that's one of the key things we'll talk about. Is what kind of behaviors do we want to start thinking about?
Great, great. One last question before we let you go, James. If somebody's considering this session, signing up for this session, coming to the conference, signing up for this session, who's really the session for? Who could benefit from this the most?
When I was in South Dakota, I kept getting emails from pastors that they were not sending me because their accounts were compromised. Mm-hmm. Right? So I recognized there was sort of a lack of knowledge about how I could properly. So I just passed out at pastors' conferences, you know, here are 10 tips, you know, to make to browse the internet more safely. the guys would come up back to me and they would say, boy, James, you know, thanks for that because I really don't know any of this stuff. So if you're somebody who is concerned about how I use the internet, but I feel like I don't quite know or have a grasp on what I should do beyond my antivirus or, you know, what my operating system is telling me to do, you're definitely the target audience here. But as well as those people who know a little bit more about computers or even know a significant amount of computers, because I've even found, you know, that even those of us who know quite a bit about computers don't practice good computer security. And that's because, unfortunately, security and convenience are diametrically opposed. and we are too busy, and so less
busy to be safe, right?
Yeah. Right, and that's a huge issue. So we'll pass on some good tips and got some software to show people. I think it'll be a really productive session for people and helpful to them in their personal life, too.
Well, we're so thankful that you agreed to do this, and we really look forward to having you at the conference and maybe even outside of the sessions talking a little bit of security and doing a little bit of networking. So, James, thank you for your time, and blessings on the Lenten season and your ministry there in West Dallas.
Very good. Yeah, same to you. We'll see you at Wells Tech 2015.
Very
good.
Looking
forward to it.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
A lot of things to think about, Sally. I think some things that are common sense, but if you really think hard about them, they're things that we do overlook. You know, things that sometimes we don't take the time to do. We're just too busy, and then ultimately, bad things can happen. So I think everybody that's going to attend that session will get some good stuff and hopefully take it back and make their entire environment safer as a result, because there's a lot of training involved and a lot of coaching and evangelism, so to speak, once you go back into your church office or school or faculty and, you know, talk about these things, because it's a challenge and it's going to get more challenging as we go along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked how James finished up there and said that security and convenience were diametrically opposed. You know, that's really the truth of the matter, is that it's just really inconvenient to deal with it, and people would rather just not. And I'm one of those people. I feel good about where I'm at regarding passwords and things, but some of those other points he was bringing up, I have lots of old software and things like that hanging around that I should really take care of and clean up my act.
Yeah. Both of us are in locations where we take security seriously. I know MLC is doing some things. I saw recently a message that came out, just kind of a warning, and I see those pretty regularly, that the staff there at MLC takes it seriously.
Yeah, actually, MLC is kind of unique. Because network services here at MLC supports not just the faculty and staff computers, but basically is support for the entire campus, for all the students that are on campus. Obviously, their computers are interacting with our network, and so we want to, you know, keep our network secure, so we don't want viruses to leak onto the system that way. You know, students need to get their work done, and I've seen students come in with tears in their eyes as they've lost, you know, valuable documents and a lot of time invested and things like that because of mistakes. And honestly, it keeps people very busy in network services to stay ahead of the curve with all the viruses that are out there. In particular, in New Ulm, we've had that ransomware software. CryptoLocker has made its rounds. I think that we're on like the fourth version. And one of the experts up in network services said, they shut down two servers that were running two different versions of CryptoLocker, and within days, new servers were up with variations of CryptoLocker. And that's the one where it'll take your hard drive ransom, basically, and you have to pay $500 or something to get your data back if they are going to be true to their word or whatever. I'm sure they've made a lot of money off of it because people, you know, are willing to pay to get their data back. I heard that it hit even like the New Ulm Chamber, and they lost all their data on their computers here in New Ulm and stuff. So, I mean, it's happening all over the place where people are losing access to their computers because of these types of viruses. So, yeah.
And even if the data, and that's kind of an interesting approach that hackers are now taking, because that data in and of itself is worthless to them. If they were to steal it and download it to their own computers or their own networks, it's far more valuable to you than to them. And if you don't have access to it, that's the weak point that they're trying to test, and they're getting away with it. So that's a particularly nasty virus that's going around that people need to pay attention to. Here in the Senate office, we take it seriously as well, because not only do we have just generic information, we have donor information, and in some cases credit card information and Social Security numbers, those kinds of things, for good reasons, for business reasons. But so we have to take extra precautions to do that. So we use a couple tools. We use Bitdefender right now as our antivirus software, and Rob Benson, who's been on this show before, really kind of leads the charge. He's our security analyst, a security administrator, and is always looking for ways to clamp things down a little bit tighter and make sure that we don't have those incidents, because, boy, it would be a bad news message to send out to the entire, you know, donor database or all our Synod constituents, Synod members, that, hey, your data was compromised. And then a local level, we're using another Bit tool, BitLocker, which is a built-in tool to the Microsoft operating system, which essentially is encryption. It encrypts your entire hard drive so that if anybody were to actually physically steal your computer, like can happen with the mobile society that we live in, they can't get at your data regardless of what they do, because it has been encrypted. So those are just a couple of the things, and I'm sure James will be talking about some of those things as well in the summer session.
Yeah, I'm going to do a quick screen share, Martin, hearkening back to MLC and messages and support that they give us here. One thing that they've recommended to us is a antivirus newsletter. It comes from a company called Viper. And just this one particular article from last month says, "Can I make my computer completely secure?" And they say you can't make it completely secure, but you can build walls around your computer and plug up holes. So they talk about antivirus software. They talk about running or protecting your browsing and making sure you have a firewall, things like that. But then really important, and what I want to point out here, is recognizing spyware. James made mention of the fact that if something pops up on your screen that you aren't looking for specifically, you know, it's a good idea not to click anything in that window or whatever. But you know, the more I'm hearing about it, I don't think you even have to click on things necessarily these days. Sometimes it's just being in the presence of some of this bad stuff. It starts installing on your computer. But I think this article here, and we'll have a link to it in the show notes, is a really good one regarding spyware and what kind of behaviors you might see on your computer if some of that spyware is installed.
Yeah. If you had any bad experiences yourself, Sally, with getting hacked or malware or viruses on your computers over the years?
I guess maybe in the past we've had one or two virus instances. Nothing recently regarding my computer, but I did recently have my debit card hacked and someone charged something on my bank account. So one practice that I do very regularly is I check my bank account online and reconcile to make sure the transactions that I'm seeing coming out of my bank account are actually ones that I made myself. So I had to cancel the whole debit card and get a new one issued and things like that. I, you know, immediately put the transaction in question, and they gave me my money back as they were researching it with Visa and through the different channels and stuff. They actually had me call the vendor. They had charged like maybe $150 worth of dermatological supplies on my credit card, and I called the vendor and they said, "You mean at this address?" And they had my address and everything, you know. So it got shipped to Indiana somewhere, but Yeah, it happens.
It does.
For sure.
But, you know, however you know, whatever precautions you take, sometimes they're not enough. That's why I'm kind of interested in how Apple Pay and Google Wallet get mm-hmm. rolled out, because there is an added level of security there, because you're really using a one-time credit card transaction number that, if tried to use again, even if it were intercepted, would not be usable. Certainly much better than a PIN that you use over and over and over again. Credit card and the CSV number on it, or CVS mm-hmm. number on the back, you know, which is people can get easily, because you're entering that all over the place as well. So
I just read an article that PayPal has something parallel to Apple Pay.
Yeah.
Use PayPal as your wallet.
Square is doing something as well. So I think they're getting the picture, getting the message that this needs to happen. Just a couple of recommendations before we leave this topic, and if you're not coming to the conference and listening to James talk. One, which I've talked about in the past, the first thing you should do is have some kind of filtering software on your home network or your school or church network. I always recommend changing your DNS settings to OpenDNS. That's a first line of defense. OpenDNS is a free service, although you can pay a little bit more and get a couple more features. But it's a very simple process. You just go into your networking software, your router software, and change the DNS from your ISP's DNS, which is usually very specific and kind of hard-coded in there, but you can change it to the open DNS numbers. And then it does some basic filtering for you and can help stop some of these phishing attacks, those kinds of things, and will kind of give you a little bit of an alert and block sites, actually. And that's really the only time I've ever had a hack. And I was kind of tricked into thinking I was entering or trying to connect something to my Twitter account. You know how you authorize Twitter, whatever, mm-hmm. to use another app, and it was a phishing attack that looked exactly like the Twitter authentication page. So I gave basically whoever it was my Twitter password, and before I know it, you know, they were tweeting on my behalf, you know, things that I didn't want to tweet it. So it can happen, and so the OpenDNS is a good thing to put in place. And another thing, don't forget about your mobile devices. Those are becoming more and more targets. This freak flaw that you may have read about is an attack that kind of lessens the encryption strength of your maybe your web browser. So if you're in Safari or Chrome on your Android, or Safari on your iPhone, it makes it easy for sites to kind of masquerade and do these phishing things and ultimately steal valuable information. So just make sure that you're paying attention to that kind of thing. And then also use a PIN code. Your devices can walk away. I was in Fairbanks. I took a red eye out of Fairbanks, Alaska about a month ago, and for whatever reason, before I went through security, this was like 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning, something like that. Fortunately.
Maybe you weren't quite awake.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I had set my phone down, and I was getting, I don't know what I was doing, checking email or whatever, and walked through security down the terminal. And then went to put my shoes on, and you know, I always put my phone in the bag, and thought, well, my phone's not in my bag or in my pocket. Where did I leave this? So I had to leave the terminal, go back, and get my phone. Fortunately, there were like 10 people in the whole airport at that point. Got my phone where I left it, which was by the check-in counter, and then went back through security. So it can happen. I've left my phone in a bathroom before. It just happens. Let alone people stealing it from you. So,
sure.
And if you don't have a PIN code on it, or if you don't have some kind of security on it, or the ability to remotely wipe it, those are all things that you really want to pay attention to. So,
Good advice, yeah. Yeah, it's kind of scary to think about. It takes time to do it.
Don't ignore it, yeah.
I think you'll be sorry if you do ignore it. So.
Yeah. All right, maybe on to some lighter topics. Maybe we need our little dose of Pinterest today.
How about that? It is ministry resource time. Let me share my screen. I think this is a first for 7+ years of podcasting. We're going to have a ministry resource that is a Pinterest page. And that Pinterest page is actually a search on Pinterest for Easter and Jesus, where you can find all kinds of really creative craft ideas. Maybe Sunday school teachers would appreciate this, different things to bake, different ways to reach out with the gospel message, in particular at Easter time. All kinds of great stuff here just waiting for you on Pinterest. I know you'll want to head over and check it out.
I'm writing it down.
That's good. You're using paper to write that on?
Yeah.
Wow.
Digital paper.
Impressive. Yeah.
Oh, good ministry resource. That does look interesting. And Pinterest, one of the things, I can't believe I'm saying this, but one of the things I really like about Pinterest is just the wide swath and usage it can have. I mean, it's not super narrow, so there's probably going to be something there that would be of interest to you if you're looking for Easter activities, Easter brunch, Easter promotion, and in a very pleasing way. It's all very graphical, and that's a good find.
Good, good. I'm convincing you. That's great. Yeah, chipping away, little by little.
I haven't called yet, but I'll get there. What's news in techie today?
Well, I just thought this headline was interesting. Changing world that we live in. An article from CNET this week. Streaming music drowns out CD sales in the United States for the first time. So revenue from streaming services like Pandora, Spotify, and Apple's Beats eclipsed sales of CDs last year. So definitely leaning more towards digital delivery than actual physical CD sales.
Makes sense, because you've got millions of songs versus just the ones that you have purchased. Do you use a streaming service at all, Sally?
I guess I'm kind of partial to Pandora. I don't use it real often. Of course, we have our own streaming service on our Wells Streams website where you can listen to Wells artists. And so oftentimes at work, I'll turn that on and have some music.
That's nice. Yeah, we've got a number of artists there. I've committed to do that. I use Deezer right now, Deezer, primarily, and it started out as a European company. I think Italy or France, maybe one of those two. I'm using it primarily now because it came with a few months free when I got a Sony headphone for Christmas, and Deezer was a little coupon card that came in, and now for I think the first year it's like $4.99, so $5 a month. That's not a bad price for unlimited streaming. So I don't know what I'll do a year from now, but for now I'm enjoying it.
Very good.
How about our tips or picks of the week? It's time for them, Sally.
And I have one to share. It's kind of education focused. I am currently taking a class, an educational technology class, and one of the things they had us do recently was review the NMC, stands for National Media Consortium Horizon Report. So this is kind of a look into the future. They do this on an annual basis. We looked at the 2014 K-12 edition. I think I even have it up here. And they just kind of analyze what technology and how technology is going to be affecting education. So they have it divided into three areas: key trends accelerating educational technology adoption, significant challenges impeding educational technology adoption, and then important developments in technology for schools. And this was actually one of my most favorite assignments I've had this semester, where we could just read this and pick an area that we were engaged and interested in and develop some kind of resource around it for use in education. And what I did was I developed a website. I named it Badge EDU because it's meant to help teachers learn about implementing badging systems. And we've talked about using badges for alternative assessment a couple of times actually on the podcast with different people, particularly I think Gail Potratz has been involved in some of these efforts in her classroom. So what I did is I set it up kind of like a game where you have to go through three different levels and take the challenge, complete the mission that's outlined there, starting with just really learning about the concept of digital badges. And I have a lot of great articles and video resources and things that I've compiled, Twitter feeds. I even have a Pinterest board on gamification and education. Imagine that. So here's the idea is that you read and learn about it, and then you take some time, complete this online form where you kind of reflect on how badges might affect your classroom and what kind of positive and negative effects you might run into as you implement a badge system. And then levels 2 and 3 actually go through the process with you of creating a badge system. I found a really great, I'll just pop it up on my screen, badge design template where it walks you through all different components of designing a badge, all different things you need to think about in terms of how you're going to deliver your badge and who's going to benefit from it, that kind of thing. So I have that available, and I encourage you to go ahead and design a badge using some of that templated resources that are out there. And then finally, there are tools for actually doing the actual design, the creation of the graphic for your badge. And I'll walk you through that. There's a couple of helpful videos there. So by the time you've completed all the challenges on the Badge.edu website, you are a winner, and you can actually earn a badge for your efforts. So you get a badge to add to your digital backpack by completing the different levels. So put a lot of work into it. I thought it might be useful for some of our Wells schools to implement badge systems, or if you consider it, you know, and pull together those resources there in one place that you can take advantage of. So that's my Badge.edu website. Check it out.
Nice. That looks very well done.
Well, thank you. I hope my instructor feels the same way. I haven't gotten my grade yet, but
when you give the badge, is it through a service like Credly or something like that?
It is. I use Credly for that purpose, but I actually learned about several others that are out there and then did a lot of reading, and there's a lot of information there on level one about the whole open badges concept, which is started by Mozilla, and they have this badge backpack that you can move your badges from Credly and others that interact with their API into your open badge backpack, mm-hmm. and have them all in one place. So lots of information around badging and lots of great results from it. That's just one, you know, aspect of that whole gamification or games in education. And so, yeah, definitely check out that Horizon report. It'll get you really excited and maybe kind of blow your mind a little about things that are coming in terms of educational technology.
Broaden your horizons. Yeah, we really do need to stay up on that because it changes so quickly.
For sure.
So do you give badges at MLC?
You know, Moodle actually has a whole badging system built into it. Yeah.
Yeah.
As does Blackboard, and I'm sure other similar Schoology and Edmodo have badges systems built into them. It's not turned on the MLC site. That's not something that we're doing here currently, but I did throw it out there as a topic for development, professional development for our faculty. So maybe I'll have the opportunity to present that here as well.
Cool. Like it.
Yeah.
All right. Sally, my pick of the week is a new feature from the folks at YouVersion. YouVersion is the online Bible. Let me share, hopefully I can share my iPad here. So here's my iPad. I'm just going to go into the YouVersion app. It's free, of course. And what they've done is they have enabled the ability to share Bible verses. They've always, you know, had that. You could always share Bible verses through whatever medium you wanted. Could be through Twitter or Facebook or whatever. But what they've done is they've given you some options that allow you to kind of pretty it up and make it a little bit more visually appealing by adding something called images. So what you do is you go into YouVersion and you're reading along. You say, hey, this would be a verse I'd love to share. So I'm just going to pick the verse that was the verse of the day in the Wells mobile app this today, and that's Romans 8:28, which is and we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. So I just tap that and highlight it. Now up at the top of the screen, there's a little share icon. It's blue on my screen. If mm-hmm. I just tap that, I can do a bunch of things. I can just do a regular old share. I can bookmark it. I can write a note about it. The fourth option is image, which is new. So I'm going to select image, and then you have at your disposal, maybe 50, 60, maybe 50 images that you can choose from. Unfortunately, not at least at this point, you can't upload your own images. I'd really like to be able to do that. But you could pick any image that you want. So maybe I will pick this one of the mountains. They're kind of either generic backgrounds, colored backgrounds, abstracts, or images of landscapes, horizons, those kinds of things. So I'm going to take this picture of a mountaintop and a stream or a lake in front of it with the reflection. And I'm going to go ahead and select it. And then what happens is that your verse is going to be superimposed over the top of it. And then you've got some creative tools that you can use to pretty it up. So in this case, it's the text is a little bit small, so I'm going to make the text a little bit bigger. And I can actually change the color or the font. So if I wanted to change the font to something that was beautiful, I kind of like that font. I can change it to black or white. Those are the only choices that I have. I'm going to leave it at white. You can actually move it around. So if I wanted to move it up toward the sky, I can do that. And then you can justify it. So you don't have a lot of creative control, but you have just enough to kind of whet the appetite and make things a little bit more visually appealing. Then I'm going to hit the Save button, and it saves it. And it's going to save it into your account. So you need to be logged in to be able to do that. And once it's saved, then you can share it. And you can share it to anything that you have the ability to connect to. So it could be Facebook, Twitter, whatever. So I'm just going to pick Twitter here. And once I do that, it opens up Twitter. And then I would tweet, sharing a great... Isn't it great watching somebody type new feature from YouVersion? So I'm going to tweet that out. I'm going to post it. And now on my Twitter feed, that image would be connected to my tweet along with what I just tweeted. And great way to share. I've done it on Facebook. I've done it on Twitter. I've seen other people do it. Just kind of a nice way to share God's word and add kind of a visual, rich image that could go along with it. Very easy to do, very free. Just kind of a nice little addition that they've made. So that is my pick of the week.
Awesome. Look what I did while you were explaining it. I picked up my iPhone and I tweeted a verse, my favorite verse. And there it is. I made it beautiful. Thank you for doing that. I use my YouVersion Bible all the time, and I didn't know that existed. So.
Well, it didn't exist till about like 5 days ago. So.
Okay, you are so cutting edge, Mr.
Right on top of it. So. Awesome. Cool stuff. So if you're not familiar with YouVersion, it's one of the first apps I always download on my mobile devices. And I take notes in there very often, but great for reading. Different translations are available. Reading plans I've mentioned, I think, on the show in the past. Time of Grace has a whole series of nice 30 or 60-day kinds of reading plans. Very cool stuff. Narration. So YouVersion is good to
it's got it all, huh?
Got it all. Let's move on to Wells Insider.
Yep, those Wells people, they're on top of things. I found this on the Wells.net homepage, a link to Please Open the Door. It's by the Truth and Love Ministry folks who are always doing wonderful outreach efforts in the Mormon community. And instead of going and knocking on doors, what they're encouraging you to do is actually open your door to the Latter-day Saint missionaries who come to evangelize you. That's right. And they give you lots of resources. It's called pleaseopenthedoor.com and just all kinds of great resources. Can I do this? Should I do this? Why share God's word with LDS missionaries, testimonies, learn more, and members. So check out their website. It looks like a really well-done effort, and they'll give you a lot of encouragement about what to say when someone rings your doorbell and you have the opportunity to share the truth of God's word, because they're not bringing you the truth when they come from the Latter-day Saints. So.
Nope, unfortunately not. But you have the truth. So.
That's cool. Right.
Like it.
Good stuff.
Want to make a Oh, is there something else on that? Wells and Cyber?
Nope. I'm ready to move on.
Wells Tech Conference 2015. Sally and I just spent a good hour and a half doing some planning for that today. So we're getting excited about it, and hopefully you are too. July 9th through the 11th here in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Early bird pricing ends April 1st. No fooling. that's, what is it, $199 before that time and goes up to $225.
That's correct.
That right? After mm-hmm. that, so if you want to save yourself
$100,
now is the time to do that, and also the time to get in on some of these pre-conference workshops because they do have limited capacity. In fact, all of our sessions can get filled up. So the sooner you sign up, the more likely it is that you are going to get the sessions that you want, like James Wilcox's session on security. Also, we wanted to make sure people know that, hey, you may not leave the conference empty-handed other than all the great stuff you're going to learn. You may walk away with a Chromebook or an Apple TV or a whole host of other giveaways that we're planning. Excited about this. A new Chromebook Pixel was just announced. Super high resolution screen, 15-inch screen, great specs. We're going to give one of those away. Some Acer Chromebooks with 15-inch screens as well. We're going to give away three of those. Lots of opportunities to win cool stuff. So if just the conference itself weren't an attraction, you may win something. And we Wells folks love to win stuff. So.
Definitely would pay your $199 entry fee, and you'd leave with all kinds of.
Yeah, you'd be making a profit
news.
On this.
For sure.
Community feedback.
Time to share my screen again. We heard from Pastor Rob Gunther up in Kenai, Alaska, who shared a link to an Unseminary blog post. Have you ever heard of the Unseminary.com site, Martin?
I have not.
Stuff you wish they taught you in seminary. Have to check it out a little bit more. Anyway, this particular article is called Five Ways to Promote Your Easter Services for $5. Longtime listeners may remember that Pastor Gunther shared with us in the past the fact that he used, a website called Fiverr.com. It's Fiverr.com. And over at Fiverr, you can basically put your graphic design kind of needs out for bid, and people will say that they'll do a design for you for $5. And he did that, I think, for a soccer camp he was hosting and shared that a few years ago on the podcast. But this article actually gives you other ideas that you could do, like send a custom song about your services, make a paper truck craft, create a 1-inch button, send a postcard from anywhere in the world, produce a quick promotional video for social media, and more ideas. So he thought they were pretty creative in the way that they laid out the article and gave you some ideas that perhaps are kind of off the radar for you that you hadn't thought of before. So check out this article. We'll have a link in the show notes.
I'm going to have to check out that site, too. Unseminary, that sounds interesting. Kind of like the rest of the story.
We'll
Thank
see.
Thank you, Rob, for sharing as usual. He was kind of light on the sharing this week. Only a couple of items there. So.
It's a busy season, Martin. We can cut him some slack.
He's slowing down, yeah.
Yeah. The next share actually was from you, Martin, an article from Church Tech Today. It's titled Using Email for Church Communication to Share Your Story.
Yeah, sometimes I think we undervalue the tool that we have in email, and it is still, I think, one of the primary tools to communicate with our members, and it kind of this article kind of weighs the pluses and minuses of using email versus social networks, and then gives you a whole slew of ideas, some that we've already talked about on the show, like MailChimp, for how to leverage that email and the emails that you have, where you can really kind of take it to the next level if you want to build a campaign or want to build a strategy around your email. Some great ideas and solutions here. So thought it was a good article, so thought I'd share.
Excellent. And then one that I shared via our DIGO links, and that is an article from Free Technology for Teachers over at freetech4teachers.com. It's 10 Google Docs, Sheets, and Forms add-ons for teachers. Covers all kinds of ways that you can creatively use those, like the tag cloud generator that will work in your sidebar in Google Docs if you're maybe doing an assignment where students are doing writing and you want to see a word cloud of what they've written so far, or different ones for Google Sheets, Save as a Doc, Flubaroo that'll do grading, and then Forms add-ons that'll notify you when forms have been submitted or limit the number of form submissions for a particular option on your form. So lots of good things. Teachers, take note, because Google Drive is a very powerful tool in the Google Apps for Education suite of tools, and you always want to extend the use of it any way you can. So that's going to do it for community feedback for this week, Martin.
Sally, tell the good people how they can submit their feedback.
Well, you know, we have a little website, folks. It's at wellstech.wells.net. Shouldn't have stopped screen sharing so quickly. Over on the website, you can find links to all our social media channels, from Google+, Facebook, and Twitter, through Pinterest, and even our Wells Tech Wiki and listserv. So lots of ways there. You can add comments on the show notes page. We actually have a brand new comment feature. If you scroll down to the bottom of our post, you'll see the ability to comment is tied to your Facebook account, so you can add comments that way, and they'll show up right here on our Wells Tech page as well. So good stuff over on wellstech.wells.net. By the way, there's a calendar here in the sidebar, so you can see our upcoming shows, and a link with the tag cloud, so if you're doing research on a particular topic, this might be an easy way to find past Wells Tech episodes using the tag cloud. All of that's available for you there in the sidebar on the web.
While you're there on that screen, why don't you tell folks what's coming up next week on the little calendar?
Oh, on that calendar, what does it say? It says that we're going to talk science and social studies. That means that it's an EdTech-focused show, as usual, our last show of the month is, and we're going to have a special guest host, our friend Jason Schmidt, a.k.a.
Well, he's special, but not kind of in that way. I mean, he's regular or semi-regular. So
yes,
you've seen him before, but if you have, then I'm sure you're as excited as we are to have him, because he'll bring his A-game.
That's
he
right.
He says he has lots of stuff in this science and social studies genre, so you will be entertained.
It's always a special show when Jason's with us. So.
That's true. Yeah. He brings a little special sunshine with him wherever he goes.
Science and social studies is the topic of the day, so tune in for that, folks.
Yep. Let's talk about our featured video of the week. Sally, you want to share another Koiné video?
That's right. Koiné has a series for Lent. I'll just share my screen real quick. And they've put it together in actually a playlist. It's called Footsteps to the Cross. It brings you up to Tenebrae. And then I think they actually have a separate playlist of videos for Tenebrae worship as well. But they actually visited our church here in New Ulm a couple of weeks ago, did the Wednesday night service for one of our Lenten services, and did this Footsteps to the Cross
It's awesome,
program.
Isn't it?
It is pretty amazing. I just kind of walked away very contemplative, very much focusing on our Savior and his desire to go to the cross for us. Really puts it in perspective.
Job with that, both with their voices, of course, and music, but also with the imagery that they use. They've got a nice display that they put together. Visuals are just awesome.
Yeah, definitely an immersive kind of experience. Yep. It's not just the music. That imagery adds
sight
a whole lot.
And sound, for sure.
For sure. So, yeah, you can experience that. We will include the chapter one, the beginning of the Footsteps to the Cross video on our Wells Tech page, and we'll have a link to the full playlist.
All right. Sally, we're on the hour here, so we've talked long enough. Our thanks again to James for joining us and sharing his wisdom. Look forward to having him join us this summer. And look forward to having all of you there as well, if you can make it. Love to have you join us in Little Waukesha, Wisconsin. Thanks for joining us today, and hope you will tune in next week as we have that special, a very special guest, Jason Schmidt, joining us. Thanks, Sally, for all you do. Blessings on your week. Talk to everybody soon. Bye-bye.